Welcome to Church Media HQ. My name is Luke Clayton, and before we get started, I want to remind you to subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts or on YouTube. And if you are watching on YouTube or maybe Facebook, feel free to like this video and then share it so that other church leaders like you can discover this content. Today's conversation is with Josh Tice, who is the founding and lead pastor of Southern Hills Church in Las Vegas. This is actually Josh's third episode with us, and we are glad that he's here. And we talk about a really interesting conversation topic, which is that of the potential concerns that come with the rise in church online. This is a really insightful conversation, and I'm excited to share it with you now. So let's get right to today's episode with Josh Tice.
Yeah, early on for COVID, man, we thought we were going to shut down for just a few weeks, and then it just went on and on. And so that played a lot with my mentality, simply because as a person who grew up going to church every single Sunday, going to a corporate gathering, and then I've been pastoring and preaching every Sunday morning for years, that was no longer part of my moment and my lifestyle. So we could say it played with my identity a little bit, perhaps. But really what it did is played with my psyche in the sense that it totally messed up my weekly schedule, and it totally messed up our church's weekly schedule. It was really difficult to practically pastor these people. It was really difficult to reach out and shepherd them. I was in a little bit of a tailspin March and April. But I'll tell you what it did drive me closer to the Lord. So I began to, late April, all throughout the month of May, really began to have a daily time with God resurface like never before. You know, I always had my 5 minutes here, my 10 minutes there, my 20 minutes there, read my chapter, spend some time in prayer, go through my prayer list. I was a very, very, very deep spiritual pastor. And suddenly there wasn't much to do. And so I spent more time in the Word than ever. More time in prayer. And by the time I got to June 1st, I was spiritually in a very, very good place because of my walk with the Lord.
Yeah, well, that I can relate there to the kind of disruption of routine. I have, since I've been, you know, started my own business and been kind of on my own, I found the value in, you know, kind of establishing your own daily routines, you know, and mine, man, I had mine down. I was kind of proud of myself because I'd gotten into the habit of, you know, getting up early, and, you know, doing things in the morning that, you know, things like exercise and whatnot. And then my daily habit was, as odd as it may be, I found myself at a coffee shop every morning, kind of starting my day there. That's just what I did. You know, I kind of took my laptop, and of course then everything shut down, and so gyms are closed, coffee shops are closed, everything. And yeah, it messed with me in a big way, as far as I was like, man, that was my routine. It for me, waking up early is not something that I naturally did, and so it's like, man, I worked hard to establish this discipline, this routine, and now it's not that I don't want to do it, I can't do it. And you just feel like you kind of lost control, you know. And so I completely relate with that, and I know pastors are struggling with that a lot. Well, I noticed you put out an article. It's actually been back in October, so several months ago at this point. But your article was "Why Our Church Won't Have an Online Campus," and I was fascinated by that. I read through it. I don't know if you knew this or not, but we actually did. We have talked about it on previous episodes. Just with me and our producer Bo, kind of just talked through this idea. We're just analyzing different approaches that people have taken, and I wanted to follow up with you about that. Like I said, that's been several months ago, last fall. How has that played out for you guys, and is it something that you're still doing?
What we do is we have kind of a promotional material that we put out every Sunday morning. Now we've started to put it out on Saturday night, probably about 7 p.m., and once on Sunday at 10 a.m., and we call it the Sunday Show. It's about 10 to 12 minutes of two hosts talking about church, talking about what it's like to be a part of a local church, trying to interact with the audience a little bit. And then it goes to some online worship, some songs that have been pre-recorded. And then I teach in a format very much like this, with a backdrop behind me talking right to the camera. I'll share the first 5 to 10 minutes of my Sunday sermon. And I'll say, if you'd like to get the rest of this, we'd love to see you in person at a future service. Hmm. Or check us out on YouTube later on this week. To which people, and so there have been a couple of questions to that. Some people ask, well, why specifically do you do that? And the answer to that is twofold. Number one, theological, and then number two, practical. I don't think it's wrong if your theology allows for distanced learning church or something like that. For me, my ecclesiology would be that a local gathering is where church takes place, that there has to be incarnational ministry for church to take place, that there has to be an actual assembly for us to church together. It's very popular now to say you don't go to church, you are the church. Yet the reality is you are not the church. One singular person sitting in front of a screen is not the church. That plays into our hyper-individualistic society. That plays into the idea that I am the Superman and I am everything. I am the church by myself when I go golfing. No, you're not. Like, theologically speaking, you are not the church. We are the church as we assemble. So, I don't know, Luke, where you stand on this or where your audience does. I'm just expressing my position as I believe the Bible teaches it. So with that being the case, I would have a really hard time if my ecclesiology is that. Now, if my ecclesiology is, yes, every individual out there by themselves is the church. They're churching, you know, when they go grocery shopping by themselves, and they're churching whenever they're reading their Bible by themselves. They are churching. Okay. If you believe that, then your ecclesiology allows for, you know, radio church and TV church and online church and virtual church. If your ecclesiology is not that, then we need to stop telling the church that this is just another format to come to church. It's not another format to come to church. So then it becomes the question of, okay, who does have access to a live streamed service? And for us, we've said those who are of the extreme vulnerable population, those who cannot get access to a vaccine, those who really truly might be hurt because of this virus, we're going to send them live stream. But once this virus has played itself out, we don't know, maybe by the end of 2021, those people will not have access anymore. The only people that will have access to our online services are literally the shut-ins, those who physically can't get out of their house ever. And that's it. So people will say, well, aren't you concerned that you may not be effectively influencing those who might possibly want to come and visit your church? And the answer is yes. I do think there are those who may not visit our church for the first time simply because we don't have an online campus or an online service. But I think the danger of affecting my ecclesiology in a negative way is worse than the possibility that I might not see a guest who watched an online service first. So what we produce is a 30-minute basically commercial for church. Like I said, to hosts, church is awesome. Then we show a clip of the church. All throughout, we sprinkle commercials. This is what it's like when you show up to church. And then on Monday, we throw out the whole sermon on YouTube. And we say, we strategically say it every week, if you missed church yesterday, we would love for you to watch this sermon so you can catch up. Some have said, well, why would you put that out there? And the answer is, I don't have a problem with people having our content. What I want them to know is they missed church.
Yeah.
And I think the vast majority of American evangelicals are being told today, you are the church. And if you watch our show on Sunday, you have gone to church. It's just not true, according to my theology.
Again, you know, I'd read the article, and that's a great summary. And I really encourage anyone, even though, you know, I guess it's, like I said, been probably 6 months since you put that out. I would recommend anyone go back and look at it, because if nothing else, it gives you some interesting perspective and a different way of looking at it. So I do have this question as far as considering different types of approaches. So if we take what you've done and let's contrast that with everybody knows by this point what North Point Community Church in Atlanta or Alpharetta, wherever, the Atlanta area, Georgia, with Andy Stanley. Everybody knows that they took the approach of basically, and I don't even know if they're back to in-service, actually physical gatherings at this point, but they basically shut down for the whole year and, you know, indefinitely, more or less. And they are, and I've, you know, Andy Stanley's made it known that he is kind of retooling his whole experience to be like a more of a production, something that they're putting out. Yet they're still having people engage in local outreach and in small group type of assemblies. So what I guess what I'm getting at is, what are your thoughts on that approach? So the way I see it is, okay, the teaching aspect of it is coming from a digital outlet, but they are still encouraging people to physically gather in these small group settings, at least from what I've seen. You know, I haven't done a deep dive into it, to be quite honest. But what are your thoughts on kind of taking that approach?
Yeah, if it worked, right? Let's say there are 50,000 people who watch the Sunday service. I guess my question would be, how many of those people are actively participating in a small group setting where there are trained pastors and deacons to church with them, right? Mm-hmm. And in those small groups, is church discipline happening? Is accountability happening? If the answer to that question is, well, we have 50,000 people watch our TV show, and we have 5,000 people going to small groups, the fact is then you have 5,000 people going to your church, not 50,000 people. Those 5,000 mm-hmm. people are churching. And if they have, I'm not a huge supporter of everything Mark Dever has ever done, but Mark Dever is right that there's certain marks that make a church. And if mm-hmm. you're not having those marks that are making a church, you're not churching. Can somebody church with 9 people in a living room? Of course they can. Of course they can. Now the question is, and I can't speak specifically to Andy's ministry, but any church that might be doing this, the question is, are the pastors then making sure that all of those small groups are able to function as an independent local church? Are they actually able to do that? So we have a satellite campus in our ministry. In our ministry, we make sure that that satellite campus has pastors available, deacons available, that they're doing all the proper things that a local church can do. They properly discipline. They properly provide accountability. They understand what it is. They're performing the sacraments, or I should say the ordinances, right? They can baptize and they can mm-hmm. distribute communion and the Lord's Supper. All of those things are necessary. If they're not doing those things, then it would not be a local church. I have no problem with the technology side. I have a problem with saying 2,000 years of ecclesiology doesn't matter because now we have a new technology. Well, let's utilize the technology and not lose our ecclesiology along the way. And by the way, there's a practical ramification of that. And that is what we call the Walmart and the mom and pop scenario. I addressed this recently. We had, I lead a network called the Idea Network, and we had a summit out in Las Vegas back in January where Carrie Newhoff, I had the opportunity of interviewing Carrie Newhoff, and I asked this specifically to him because he's a major proponent of online church. And by the way, you might be here today and you think, listening to this, you know, man, he really hates. No, I've got a lot of friends who are proponents of online church. In fact, one of my best friends, Josh Ermler, is a huge proponent in his church for an online experience. I get along with many people. I'm just very passionate about my position on this. Yeah, but I asked Carrie Newhoff about that. I said, one of my big concerns as American evangelicalism fully embraces this model is the rise of you want to talk about the rise of the mega church. We're talking about the rise of the mega church and the mom and pops being destroyed. You say, what do you mean by that? Any small town in Indiana can tell you the moment Walmart moved in. The moment Walmart moved in, they shut down all the mom and pop shops. Now you say, okay, so big deal. Like I'm a big business capitalist. So am I. I'm fantastic. Great. All about whoever can make a better product and ship it in. The question is, what are the unintended consequences when it comes to the ecclesiology? So now, practically speaking, if we had 12 churches that were mega churches and churches just online, what in the world is going to keep every single church member in America from tuning in to the 12 best productions in America. Why would they not? Because if I'm just a knockoff of Steve Furtick, why don't they just watch the real Stephen Furtick? Or if I'm a knockoff of Timothy Keller, like that's my theology, that's how I teach, and he's my hero. Well, if you're just a knockoff of Tim Keller, why don't they just watch the real Tim Keller? And I think what we'll see is the rise of the mega. So guys like Andy, of course, would lean into this. Why? Because they can only grow from this. My question is, why in the world would anybody who teaches like Andy, follows Andy, and his ministry is based on an Andy Stanley type of a leadership style or church, why would they watch the knockoff Andy that is 20 minutes down the road and not watch the real Andy that's 2,000 miles away? So if that is the case, then what these megas need to do is they need to do what Joel Osteen has done for 15 years. At the end of each one of his broadcasts, he says, now this is Joel, which a lot of people don't like Joel. I get it. But at least Joel is so I get passionate about this.
This is good. Good stuff.
Well, I mean, at least Joel is moral enough, I should say ethical enough, to look at the camera and say, if you don't have a church in your area, you contact us. We will help you find a local church in your area. Well, good for you, Joel. Good for you, Joel. I wonder how many online services say that. But what we're getting is, no, you're in church, sit there in your pajamas, and here's a tithe button. And so what we're going to see is all of these churches with 80 people, 150 people, 200 people across America, they're going to shut down. Why are they going to shut down? Nobody comes. Why? Because nobody needs to come because they're going to church in Atlanta. This is a problem. That's a problem. It's a long-term 50-year problem. And we're going to look around and say, where's the church in America? They're gone.
Yeah. Wow. And honestly, that is all angles I've never considered. Of course, where I sit, I'm not a pastor. I don't, you know, I attend church, but I don't, lead a church in that way. And so I have to check myself every once in a while because I get caught up in the coolness of the technology of it all because that's what I do, you know. And of course, you said you're not anti-technology. I mean, we should be using it more than ever, you know, to reach people. But that's a really good thought because, yeah, I didn't know that about Joel Osteen, but I know, Kerry Schmidt, who's someone who's you've had speak for you and whatnot, he I noticed that at the end of his podcast, his preaching podcast, he's very emphatic about, hey, this is not your church home. Find a church in your area. And, they do say, hey, if you want to support our media ministry, that'd be great, but don't let this, replace any giving you're doing to a local, church there. So man, that is an interesting thought. And the analogy you made there with a Walmart corporate type of moving in and taking over the mom and pop's market there. I mean, that's a great way to look at it because that's something I like to do from time to time. Is take a step back and say, well, let's not think about church specifically. Let's just think about business and organizations and just how that works. Because sometimes people, they probably think I'm picking on churches and saying, you know, you need to do better in this area and encouraging them to, you know, always obviously in the area of like graphics and video and doing better. But, you know, the reason I like to take a step back, like I said, every once in a while and say, hey, look, this is not just about, this principle doesn't just apply to churches. It applies to everyone. And so that analogy you made there, was really good. So, let me ask you, this, and I think you already started to answer the question, but how has this worked out for you guys as far as taking this online campus, no actual live stream unless you're truly at risk? I guess about 6 months later, how are you guys, how's it working out for y'all?
I guess there's two ways to answer that. It's worked out well in that we're following our theology. So I'm not trying to be smug or sarcastic with that. Like, the win, the number one win is, are we following our theology and our conscience on this? And the answer is yes. So we already won, regardless of what that means. Number two, practically, it's worked out fine. In fact, what we're going to be doing now, we've had people that have been upset with us, don't understand my full reasoning behind that. Specifically, there are those that have been upset because they say, hey, we just want to watch it online, to which that leads to a pastoral conversation, right? Huh. So a pastor in our church, one of the pastors or myself, will have a conversation and we'll say, oh, why do you want to watch it online? let's talk about this, which is part of church, personal accountability and confrontation. Okay, why do you want to watch it online? Well, because, you know, I live with my grandmother and she's very old. Oh, absolutely. You're vulnerable population. Here's the link. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to watch it online because, you know, it's just become really convenient. And we sit with our kids and we have popcorn and we watch. And I say, that's not going to work for us. Well, they say, well, who are you? And literally I've had people say, well, who are you not to provide the link? The answer is it's our link. And if you want a link to an online church service, I'll send you 12. And we do. We will literally email people links to online churches. This is where you can start going to church now. I've had people say to me, are you telling me I'm no longer part of your church? I've looked at them and I said, you are no longer part of our church. Now, the moment you want to come back, you can be part of our church, but I don't want to pretend to be your pastor because I talk to you through a screen. And I won't want to pretend that you have community here when you don't talk to anybody else in the congregation. We're not going to pretend, we're not going to play those games, but here's the link to another church, online church. I have no problem with that. Now, have we seen some of that? Yeah, but very little, honestly, Luke. What we've seen otherwise is we've seen a massive return to online, or I should say in-person gathering. So I've had more conversations with people that have said to me, Pastor, I'm really glad you put it in those terms. Because it's helped me to come back to church and get back involved in church. And when you look at our in-person attendance versus that of the normal church of our size in Las Vegas, we are, at this point, we're recording this in at the beginning of March. Our numbers are 70 to 75% of our pre-COVID numbers. And those numbers are blowing away churches of our size across the country. So we have far more people coming back to our in-person gatherings than others. And I'm talking about, again, beginning of March when all of the numbers are down. We're not talking about the middle of December for those who might be listening to this later. We're not putting people at risk. We have high mitigation practices. But people are coming back because we're telling them it's time to come back. This is what most churches are doing. It's time to come back. Also, watch the link, watch the link, watch the link. Here's 14 emails telling you to watch the link. It's a double, it's we're putting out two messages there, and I don't know that it's helping us get people back to church.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you may have already, again, started to answer this or alluded to this earlier, but how long do you guys intend to take this approach, or is this kind of an indefinite thing?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if it's forever. I do know that before the pandemic, it was back in November, 3 or 4 months before the pandemic really hit, we had already canceled all online services before that. So we had online services, but I noticed that this was a problem because it was basically becoming a crutch for certain people that were. I was trained in an era before online services, and they used to say, you can watch as somebody begins to backslide because here are 4 or 5 steps that they will take before they stop coming to church. And I saw it for 10 years. We added on to that a couple years ago. The first step is they'll stop showing up to in-person and they'll tell you every week, oh, I'm watching online. I'm watching online. I noticed that for probably about 2 years, late 17 to late 19, 2017 to 2019, people saying this. And then eventually I would never see them again. And I just began to chalk that up to, once again, here's a step. It's an easy step to say, oh, I'm just watching online. And the reality is that was just a step toward not being involved in any way. So we took that step off the table so that whenever we called them and said, hey, you've been missing church, it was a real phone call. How long are we going to keep it? Probably indefinitely. But what it has allowed us to do is say, okay, technologically, what do we want to do? And right now, what we're doing, what we will be shifting by Easter, is that our Sunday service, or what we call the Sunday service special, is going to have more of a live feel to it. So we're going to we're going to have cameras that come in. You're going to see our services in the background. Our hosts are going to be live. Welcome to Southern Hills Live. We're so glad you're here. We're going to be able to go, once we get better equipment, go into the service during times. They're going to hear the worship a little. They might hear one of the songs. They're going to cut back and be like walking through the foyer and it's really glad, we're really glad you're here. Kind of like they would for a parade at Thanksgiving. Okay, let's throw it back to the pastor's sermon. He's just getting into point number 2, and they jump back in the middle of sermon. They hear a funny story. They hear an explanation of a Bible verse. Then it comes back to them. Wow, that sure is a great service. And at Southern Hills, this is what we're all about. We want you to come. We go to a commercial. The commercial talks about small groups. So it really is going to be set. My vision is that it really is truly an online 30-minute infomercial about what church is for people. So that if you are a person living in Las Vegas, you're going to watch this 30-minute infomercial, but you will not watch it every week because it'll be pretty much the same infomercial. It's strategically designed to catch the eye of the first person that we want to pull into the church, but also strategically designed so that nobody could have a weekly diet of this. After 3 or 4 weeks, they just get bored. It's the same thing over and over.
Yeah, and man, that is talk about an innovative, creative idea. I mean, props to you guys for taking that approach in terms of, I'm really going to be really interested to see how that plays out with that live. I mean, almost like you've got live, commentators and sideline reporters, if you will. That's pretty cool. So yeah, I'm interested to see where can someone watch this if they want to actually see what you're doing here.
Yeah, they can follow us on our Facebook page, the church's Facebook page, Southern Hills Church of Las Vegas. And again, right now, what we're doing up until Easter are pre-recorded Sunday shows. Post Easter, you're going to see us try to figure this out. If you're thinking sideline football game or Macy's Day Parade, it's not going to be that yet. I mean, it's not going to be that good. That's the ultimate vision, right? I mean, we're not NBC over here, but that's the ultimate vision. That's what we wanted to have, that feel of, man, I wish I was at that game. Man, I wish I was at that parade. I think what we've been doing as a whole with the evangelical churches in America is we've been trying to replicate the service so well so that people in fact, you hear pastors say this, we want them to feel like they're right there. I want them to not feel like they're there. I want them to feel like I want to be there. Now, again, if your ecclesiology is no, they can be there and still church with us, then that's fine. It's not necessary for you. But if your ecclesiology and practicalities, you want them to be there, then you need them to say, man, I want to go to there, I felt like I was there.
Yeah. Well, again, a lot of good perspective there. And so I am interested to see how that, how that turns out. Aren't we all? Yeah. I know something, we'll kind of wrap up with this last little section here as we move into talking about something else. I know something that, we started out talking about how our routines were affected and our relationships have been affected by this pandemic. You know, we've had to keep our distance from people and, there was, depending on what part of the country you lived in, I mean, some people felt completely isolated for weeks or months on end. And you've got a resource, a new book that talks about friendship and relationships, if I'm understanding it right. And so I wanted to give you a moment to kind of talk about, this is your first book, I believe, what it's all about.
Yes. Man, I appreciate you letting me talk about that. If my odd views of online church haven't turned you off too much, trust me, this book will help pave over those road bumps. The quest for friendship. That's one of the things I worked on throughout COVID, and primarily because of what God had done in my personal relationships the few years prior to this book, as well as during COVID. I've come to this realization, Luke, that most men don't have true, deep, connected friendships. Over the last few years, I've had the opportunity through counseling and multiple conversations, not only with ministry leaders, just with the average man that comes to our church, everyday Joes. I've made it a practice over the last 2 to 3 years to look guys in the eye and say, tell me something. Let me ask you a question. Who do you have in your life right now that if something happened, some tragedy took place, that you could call and they would pick up the phone no matter what? They would be there for you. Who do you have that you can look in the eye and be completely 100% authentic, real, and honest with? Who do you have that you can share your hopes, dreams, fears, and problems with, and that they won't look at you any different? who do you have like that in your life? And most men, 90% of the time, I get this. They look, and then they look down. They look away. And they shake their head and say, I don't really have anybody like that. Wow. Especially men. Over the years, we have prayer requests come in every Sunday at the church. In fact, we fill out connection cards and people put their prayer requests on, and I pray through those. Have for years and years and years. The number one prayer request that we get from women, the number one for over 10 years, the number one prayer request my wife and I get is, please pray for me, Pastor. I just want God to send me a friend. That's from women. Number one prayer request that we've got from women, please pray for me, Pastor. I just want God to send me a friend. So this is a male problem. This is a female problem. I don't think that we have built relationships. Again, I'm going to sound like the most anti-tech guy in the world, but I think that's the rise of technology. I think the rise of lack of true intimacy. And I think we have a problem as we're becoming more and more isolated. We go into our homes and dad goes to a room and watches a screen, and teenager goes to a room and watches a screen, and child goes to a room, watches a screen, mom watches a screen somewhere else. And what we're not doing is connecting like human beings. This book, Quest for Friendship, is a practical how-to guide to re-engage in personal friendships and personal relationships and build them around a relationship with God and build friendships and step-by-step guide on how to be authentic, real, and genuine with those in your life.
Yeah, and it's so true because, you know, we live in a society that seems more connected than ever, yet when it comes to that true, authentic relationships, there is massive disconnect. And so that when you ask that question about do you have those people, you know, I ask myself that. Thankfully, I could say I do. I have two or three guys that come to mind that they're that person that I could call. But that is something that I struggle with as far as I actually tend to be a little bit more introverted when it comes to, you know, meeting new people and whatnot. And so, you know, it's just something that's going to help everyone. So where can the Quest for Friendship, where can we find this?
Well, you can find it at ideanetwork.church. First, it'll be there. You can pre-order it. And then start ordering it on March 23rd, whenever it launches. You'll be able to find it on Amazon months later, but for now, it's just going to be sold exclusively on our website, ideanetwork.church. It's interesting that you brought up introvert. I have an entire chapter called Know Your Lego. And we talk about the fact that we can connect a certain amount of people, or everybody can only connect to a certain amount of people. And some people, introverts, tend to have less connectors on their Lego. Totally fine. Totally good. To know how many connectors you have and to have those filled is incredibly important. Some people have larger Legos. It's interesting to me in my research on this, introverts tend to have deeper relationships and real authentic relationships more than extroverts who might have 1,000 friends yet never really truly connect on a deep level with any of them. So, and some people can become so introverted that they never truly open up to anyone. So, It's an important one. One of the aspects I talk about, which is interesting too, is you say, well, I do have some of those relationships. One of the chapters called Circles of Friendship, where I talk about how to properly categorize your friends in your own mind so that you understand how to properly interact with those people and the pain that comes when you've accidentally categorized yourself in somebody else's circle of friendships in the wrong category. I thought we were close friends. They categorize you as an acquaintance. Have you ever come across somebody who expects you to know way more about them than you do? That's because they categorized you as a good friend or part of your group or part of your tribe, and you don't really know their name. And so it's important to understand those relational dynamics. Otherwise, you embarrass yourself or you embarrass others. And so this book deals with a lot. It's a very broad concept of friendship, not just how to build friendships, but also how to understand friendships in your life and those that you love.
Yeah, and that's really good about understanding your relationships. You know, I think I just heard you talking on it was Brian Sam's podcast about how a lot of times, especially in going back to the church world, you have these people you thought were friends, but really they're just kind of more or less business associates, because, you know, church as relationally based as it should be when it comes to especially church leaders dealing with other church leaders, it's very much it's very businesslike in a lot of ways. And so, you know, people can be really crushed when they realize, oh man, I thought this guy's with a friend, but really turns out they just, you know, they wanted to have me come preach, or they wanted to have me, you know, do whatever it is. And it was more of a business. And that happens again in all elements of life.
We talk about it in the book. We say it this way: your insurance agent is not your friend. They're friendly. But in the real world, like, people really do fall into these traps. We think that person is my friend. No, they're trying to sell you insurance. Call them about a personal issue later. They're not your friend. And that's okay for people to be friendly, as long as we understand where they've categorized us, so that we don't get into emotional and hurtful damage.
Well, check out Josh's book there, and also get connected with the Idea Network. I know you guys just launched a charter membership there, and so church leaders for sure are going to want to check that out. But Josh, I do thank you for being here with us on ChurchBD HQ. It's good having you back, and we will we'll have you again sometime.
Hey, man, I look forward to it. I hope I wasn't too negative on this one, but it was a good conversation. I enjoyed it.
It was really good. A lot of good insight, and I think our listeners and consumers here are going to really enjoy it. Well, thanks again for joining us for today's episode, and we would really appreciate it if you'd share this content with other church leaders. We hope it provides value to you, and you can help us out by sharing it with others so that it can potentially provide value to them. Church Media HQ is a production of the Must Increase Network. The show is produced and edited by Bo Snyder. The executive producer and host is myself, Luke Clayton. And before I sign off, I do want to remind you, you know what I'm going to say, you need to try something new, because it is so much better to fail at trying the awesome than it is to succeed at doing the average. We'll see you next time right here on Church Media HQ.